it's time for him to go down the mountain.
Right.
And this is that famous scene from the Ten Commandments when Charlton Heston is walking down Sinai and he's carrying these massive tablets. And as Moses walks down the hillside, down the mountainside, he can hear revelry. He can hear a party. Something wild is taking place. And lo and behold, the very people who just a few weeks before had said they would obey the law of God and live into the covenant which God had for them, they've taken their gold and silver jewelry. They've had Aaron, Moses' brother, who was the high priest of God, take this jewelry, throw it into a pot, and shape it into an idol, into an animal, and they are dancing like pagans around it. It's horrifying. Moses is distraught at what he sees. And we read on page 65 of the story, when Moses approached the camp and saw the calf and the dancing, his anger burned, and he threw the tablets out of his hands, breaking them to pieces at the foot of the mountain. And he took the calf the people had made and burned it in the fire. Then he ground it into powder, scattered it on the water, and made the Israelites drink it. And when Moses confronts his brother Aaron about making this idol, how does Aaron respond? Do you remember this in your reading? Oh, Moses, you're overreacting. I just took what they gave me and I threw it into this pot and this calf just came out. Yeah, right. Deflecting what he had done, ashamed at what he had done. And yet amidst the pain and the hurt which Moses surely felt at his own people for the act that they had done of the treachery involving the worship of a false god, Moses goes to God and makes what is known as the great intercession before him. On page 66 of the story, we read, "So Moses went back to the Lord and said, 'Oh, what a great sin these people have committed. They've made themselves gods of gold. But now, God, please forgive their sin. But if not, then blot me out of the book that you have written.'" It's an amazing act of prayer and servant leadership that Moses is displaying on behalf of his people to God. And God responds by telling him that he will deal with those who sinned against him, and he sends a plague amidst the people. So then God tells Moses, "I want you to go back up the mountain one more time. I'm going to give you another set of tablets." So Moses goes back up the mountain, and he receives the Ten Commandments in stone. And then it's time for Moses to descend the mountain. And this is where we come to the reading from this morning.
Hear the word of the Lord, Exodus 34. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with two tablets of the covenant law in his hands, he was not aware that his face was radiant because he had spoken with the Lord. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant, and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them. So Aaron and all the leaders of the community came back to him, and he spoke to them. Afterward, all the Israelites came near him, and he gave them all the commands that the Lord had given him on Mount Sinai. When Moses finished speaking to them, he put a veil over his face. But whenever he entered the Lord's presence to speak with him, he removed the veil until he came out. And when he came out and told the Israelites what he had been commanded, they saw that his face was radiant. Then Moses would put the veil back over his face until he went to speak with the Lord. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Well, it's hard to keep track at this point. If I'm adding correctly throughout the book of Exodus, this is the fifth time, so four other times Moses has gone up and down. This is the fifth time that he is coming down the mountain. And the last time, remember, he came down the mountain, he found chaos. pagan worship, and he broke the tablets. But this time, the people are ready to receive him and learn what God has given him. Matt just read, "Afterward, all the Israelites came near him, and he gave them all the commands the Lord had given him on Mount Sinai." The Hebrew literally reads in this passage that the skin of Moses' face sent out horns. And up until the Middle Ages, the Vulgate, which is the Latin translation of the Bible, which the Roman Catholic Church uses to this day, that the Vulgate changed that in the time of the Reformation to say that he shined like rays of sun. But if you look at a lot of classic, beautiful church art over the years, could you please advance that? That is Moses by Michelangelo, and no, Moses is not wearing Mickey Mouse ears. Those are horns. And if you look at a lot of Renaissance art, the beautiful art that came out of the period of from the 1300s through the 1500s, Moses almost always, in paintings and in sculptures, has horns on his head. So if you've ever wondered, as you were looking at art, why Moses had horns on his head, now you know. Okay. But Moses is transcendent. I mean, he's incandescent, rather. He has been in the glorious presence of God, and the result of his exposure to divine radiation, he was glowing. He was luminous. People were frightened by how he was glowing, and as Old Testament scholar John Currid describes Moses, the effulgent splendor of Almighty God was on Moses. Despite the sinful, unfaithful acts of his people, God remained faithful to them, de facto renewing his covenant promises that he had made through them by providing another copy of the Ten Commandments. God could have started over. He could have chosen a more faithful people in which to work his plan through. But we learn that God is faithful to us despite our own unfaithfulness towards God. Moses, as God's mediator to his people, was able to experience a very close relationship with God, which caused his face to glow at every encounter. But afterwards, after a few days, it would start to diminish. Then when Moses went back in God's presence, he would get bright and glowing again. Moses is the giver of God's law, and he points to something as the giver of the law greater than himself. Moses and God's law point to Jesus. Jesus, the Son of God, is the only person who has ever lived on earth who is able to keep the law of God perfectly. And while Moses was a great mediator for his people, Jesus is the perfect mediator for all of humanity. In the New Testament book of Hebrews, we read in the opening lines that, quote, "The Son is the radiance of God's glory." While the glory of Moses was the reflection of the glory of God outwardly, Jesus radiates from his own divine being. Jesus shines with all the glory of God. In him there is fullness of glory, compared to which in Moses there was a flicker of light. It is because of Jesus entering into the world that we are able to be made right, though we are not able to keep God's law. So we try to pull this together. As we read through the story over the course of the next several weeks and months, we have to always remember the greater storyline that is before us. God creates a perfect world and places Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden to be the protectors of the garden and to work the garden. Our first parents fall into sin, and because they fall into sin, the entire cosmos falls into shadow and darkness. Within the fall, there is promise. God speaks to Eve and says that through your seed, one will come who will crush the head of the serpent. God then chooses Abraham to be the father of a people whom God will bind himself to and from whom the promise of Eve will be fulfilled. And here at Sinai, we witness God's willingness to bind himself legally in a legal document, so to speak, through the Ten Commandments. He binds himself to a people he knows will not keep their end of the agreement. But it's all part of God's greater plan of redemption. Right. Everything in the Old Testament points to Christ and what he has done for us. The new is in the old concealed. The old is in the new revealed. We'll learn more about God shaping a people as they journey through the wilderness this coming week in the story.